You're with Mike Ryan on today's News Talk Radio. TNT.
Okay, a lot of things happening around Australia. We have the interest rate rise, 1.85%, which is going to really put the scare the bejeebus out of many, many Australians. Also, companies still going, just falling belly up. Another one, Australian tech company Metigy collapses suddenly, leaving staff shell-shocked. Staff at the company were left stunned by the news after the company planned to raise money recently based on a $1 billion valuation. So that was just a horrendous, to say the least, and it just shows you that the Australian economy is in, as they would say, deep doo-doos. What else do we have here? Okay, here's one that'll bring joy to your hearts and joy to the my next guest. Peter Dutton is to support tougher emissions reduction target as Liberals are warned not to be weirdos on climate change. Too late, they are weirdos, but it's not just climate change. Under pressure from strategists and moderate MPs, the woke ones and the wacky ones, the ones that don't know much about science, but they'll do anything for a vote, Liberal Party leader Peter Dutton has flagged a significant change to its climate change position. Here's a part of a report.
We know this climate change bill will be introduced to the House of Representatives either tomorrow or Thursday. So the Coalition Party Room finally had a discussion. Peter Dutton's already said publicly he won't be supporting the bill. The Party Room agreed to this, but Peter Dutton sought to reassure the Liberal Party Room in particular that for the next election, the Coalition will have a tougher target than they took to the last election. He told the Party Room, according to sources that have spoken to me, that he will eventually announce a target larger than 26 to 28% in terms of emissions reductions by 2030. But he described the government bill as a stunt. He said even the government says they don't need legislation for the target they've gone for. Now, there were three speakers, as I understand it, who were in the camp of let's support the bill. And these MPs have been spoken about in terms of, two of them at least, in terms of possibly crossing the floor. One was Bridget Archer. Ooh. She said that it looks bad if we're not supporting cutting emissions, the Tasmanian MP. Another one was the Senator Andrew Bragg. The Liberal Senator pointed out that the Liberal Federal Director Andrew Hirst had told the Liberal Party Room last week that they needed to win city seats back to win government. They could not just rely on outer suburban and regional areas. And Andrew Bragg said climate policy was a big part of that. Another MP spoke, James Stevens, and he has ruled out crossing the floor, but he said he was okay to go along with this, but he did not want crazy statements. That's what I've been told. He said he from various sources, did not want crazy statements coming from certain MPs in terms of climate change targets. So there you have it, Ash. You have Peter Dutton seeking to appease the moderate Liberals by saying, I'm not going to stick to 26 to 28% as the target, but I'm not going to 43 either. And then the Coalition elected that they are not going to support this bill, which is something we very much suspected would occur or expected would occur. This leaves or sets the scene for the Greens to decide what happens in the Senate. We've heard already today that they've had one meeting, been unable to come to a conclusion, are having another meeting this evening. But my sources within the Greens suggest to me they may well support the bill, Ash.
So there you are. Don't call me Ash. Call me anything but not late for dinner. So there you are, the LNP in Canberra under the watch of Peter Dutton. Don't be weirdos. They are weirdos. But speaking of weirdos, we'll keep this under the LNP umbrella. The great state of Victoria under the Labor Party. They have a Labor government. They have an election coming up shortly. And they must be rubbing their hands with joy. Now, we've got Matthew Guy, very much like a gentleman called Dickie Knee. It used to be on Hey Hey It's Saturday, but Dickie Knee had a better face for politics. I mean, let me tell you, this guy is a drip. Matthew Guy couldn't run a bowling club, and yet he's the opposition leader. And that is why the Labor Party, terrible as they are, awful as they are, corrupt as they are, that's why they'll run the government or run Victoria again. But what about this? The Victorian Labor government will make referrals to law enforcement, integrity and regulatory agencies after it was sensationally revealed that Matthew Guy's, wait for it, chief of staff, asked for more than $100,000 in payments to his private business from a party donor. Do you think they're in deep poop? They are indeed. I think the LNP under the watch of Matthew Guy is just about long gone, dead, forgotten, chopped up, made into rissoles or whatever you like. They're finished. And they deserve Matthew Guy because the LNP, both federally and state-wise, wouldn't know if their foot was on fire. They are dreadful. Now, at TNT Radio, we never go home. I do. I went home on Sunday, so shut up. Now, we are committed to bringing you our take on the biggest topics of our time. We broadcast live 24/7 online globally, no matter what. By the way, we've got you covered on TNT Radio.
The latest headlines waiting for you.
I follow the news pretty much throughout the day.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, the huge boil, which is the COVID-19 vaccine, has not been lanced. Just visualise that. Now, we have daily evidence of injuries, some very serious, which our governments and the media refuse to acknowledge. And in addition, research is emerging of serious long-term effects of the jibby jibby jab jab. Sounds like a song from Rolf Harris. But it's still too early to know. Therefore, the jab should never have been forced on us. It's still a trial. And what will happen to the injured? Put out to pasture, maybe. Don't talk about it, whatever you do. Not part of our reality. It's very much part of our reality, and more so as time goes on. How will they be treated, and who will pay for their treatment? John Parsons, multi-millionaire, describes himself as an undereducated biologist. He's been involved in science projects since 1795. John's an avid researcher on COVID-19, knows a lot about life. He told us about his first start in life. Well, in romance style, that was, ways, something like that, but we won't talk about that. It's a family show. He knows a lot about self-sufficiency, and that's why you hear the cockatoos flying about above him when he's talking. And he knows dinner is almost ready with that 12-gauge. And he's a regular guest on TNT Radio. John, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
We've had you. Goodbye. No, I'm sorry. Hey.
Up to you, Nick.
That's right. No, we love you. We love crypto. And when you talked to Sabine, it was crypto, but we love you, mate. So, yes. So let's be sensible, because I know there's celebrations in your heart at the moment, joyous tappings with your feet and champagne flowing, and congratulations on that too.
Thank you, mate. I owe nothing, and I am happy.
That's right. Until probably Friday. But anyway, enjoy
Friday
the moment. It's not real, let me tell you. You come back to Earth with a thud. Look, is there early research pointing to a link between the COVID-19 jab and brain disorders or injuries?
Oh, yes. That's probably the worst news we could have hoped for. It's a prion disease, I suppose, is the best way to put it. This was identified very early by people who were studying the spike, and they said there's a prion area of the disease, and they predicted a brain degenerative disease. And, of course, now it's starting to show up. And it's probably best people would have heard of mad cow's disease, and that's probably the best way to describe it, or an outbreak of bovine spongiform disease. It's an interesting thing. Creutzfeldt Jakob disease is also another version of it, and Kuru, which is what showed up in New Guinea from the cannibals.
Oh, yum.
And in New Guinea, they identified it because the women were eating the brains, right? So they'd have a ceremony where they'd cannibalise a victim or a wise man, more than likely. And the women would be allowed
not
to
so
eat
wise. You're caught and you've been eaten, wise.
And this showed up with them shaking and having all sorts of different, symptoms. And they eventually identified it as a prion disease. Now, the best way to put that is a prion is a part of this spike protein. And only this coronavirus has got it, which is very unusual. And the more things we find about this coronavirus being unusual means that obviously someone's probably tampered with it. But we that's becoming more spoken about now. But the other interesting thing about it, it seems to be not consistent throughout different variants. And the first one was where it was very obvious, dominant, or serious, and that's where it was identified. But the later, Omicrons don't seem to be as, fluent in their language of prion. So it's not as bad on this version and what it was on the original. The trouble is the vaccines were made to duplicate the original spike. So they have got this thing, and that's what they're given to hundreds of millions of people. So it's now turning up. You may have just seen recently where they announced that mad cow's disease, which was 20-odd years ago in England, and anybody that had was over in England at the time and ate meat could have eaten the meat from mad cows. Mm-hmm. So they could have infected themselves with it, mm-hmm. and that's where they got the same disease. Mm. But also it was transmittable. So people that had sexual relationships with these people at that time couldn't donate blood in Australia. Mm. Now, they've just allowed people in Australia that were in England that time or associated with people where bodily fluids were exchanged. Mm. Also, plant transplants or where they'd be given skin transplant or an eye. Someone had donated some material for your eye or... Mm. even an internal body part, or even they saw infections between not properly disinfected medical instruments. So this thing is contagious. These things are contagious. Mm-hmm. But probably the thing I fear the most is if you catch the disease, the virus, even the first one, it's a virus. Your immune system does its job and it gets rid of it. And we all know that immune response is what you get sickest from after that. Your body's got rid of the virus has gone away, and then you've got the immune response problem, which is the long COVID and all the rest of it. Although another interesting is what Sabine has found, that there's residual virus attached to the ACE2 receptors in the colon. So, that's where what she's coming up with is possibly even, it's good news for her theory, that if she can get rid of that congregation there, in volume, then you are, again, getting less of this virus in your system. But the trouble with the vaccine is it makes you produce this spike, which has this prion area. So it looks like, again, the unvaxxed are laughing. Mm-hmm. The vaxxed are in a serious long-term problem. That's my theory on it.
Yeah, it's terrible. I recall mad cow disease. I mean, there's always that terrible joke that was floating around when I was growing up. In fact, some say I haven't grown up just yet, but I'm working on that part. And it puts you and I in the same boat, by the way, so don't you snigger. But I mean, the one cow, this is in England with mad cow disease, one cow says to the other cow, "Are you worried about mad cow disease?" And the other cow says, "No, I'm not." The other cow says, "Why not?" "It's because I'm a dog." So that's the mad cow disease joke. Anyway, it was pretty funny.
It works.
You did nothing. You just went quiet. Thanks, because you're a millionaire. just being serious, though, what are the symptoms of these brain disorders?
Like memory loss, personality changes, impaired thinking. You know, sounds a little like brain fog, doesn't it? Blurred vision and blindness, insomnia, difficult speaking and swallowing. Shaking seemed to be the one they saw, like Parkinson's type shaking.
Motor neuron,
I remember seeing film of the Papua New Guinean women that were identified with it, and they were, shaking pretty violently. Mm. And, so there's a... And it's transmittable. It's, we all heard over the time about shedding and whether or not, and how the spite was designed by CSIRO to try and control mouse populations and they did experiments with how the mice could spread it between each other and be infertile. So if that is the case, and if the shedding, which to me there is some evidence of it, if that's the case, then and this spike, this prion area on the spike is being obviously transmitted with it, and it's therefore, yes, it could be a real another avenue of infection. But the problem, I think, is the fact that the vaccines we've been using, including the adenovirus vaccines, they are have this prion area on the spike that's part of them, and they go into your cell, and you're continually producing them. And as Gert said, each time you get a catch of this virus, it surges your immune system to boost, and it boosts this thing that you've been given originally, which is the priming or the original energetic sin scenario. So you're continually producing this spike so that your immune system develops a reaction. It's developing the wrong reaction, but you were given it. You weren't given it. You were made produce it.
Is that just for those that have received the vaccine, or is that from those? Is it for everyone that that your body starts producing the wrong message?
Just the vaccines.
Wow.
If you'd caught the virus, the original Wuhan strain, then you would have caught the virus with this spike protein, with this prion area on it. So the original one was not good, but it doesn't last long, 5 days in your system, and then you chew it up, and then you have an immune response, which could be good or bad. So it's the length of time and the amount of it that's in your system. And catching the virus, you tend to get rid of the virus. You attack the virus, you get rid of the virus. So even if there is this bad thing over, you might have a bit of effect. But that's nothing like you continually producing that spike, which is what these things that we call vaccines make you do. So I think that, and the other good thing from what I can work out is the new variants don't seem to have the amount of this area in the spike. So they don't seem to be as prion active as the Wuhan was. So even if you catch the Omicron or the BA4 or 5 or the 2.75, which we're hearing a bit more about that, we spoke about that last time, and, you know, they may be evasive, they may be more contagious, whatever, but they are still an original virus that you have your normal ability to control as long as you haven't been vaxxed.
Yeah, it's terrible, isn't it? I think we're in for a great shock. Don't go away, John. This is TNT Radio.
Jeremy Nell on TNT Radio.
But it's also really important, David, because this isn't like other conversations. This is about our health.
And liberty.
Yes,
and liberty.
Of course.
And the health thing right now is a weapon to make us lose our sovereignty as a nation, as countries, and sovereignty over our own personal beings, our bodies. It's far more effective than bullets and bombs, although that's coming too, and it's already going on in some places. But this has been decades in the making, using healthcare. In fact, the Nazis used the idea of healthcare. I think that's becoming more popular now, about how they linked diseases and the Jews together, that sort of thing, you know. And I'm not at all surprised. Plus, health is a good way to scare people.
Jeremy Nell and Germ Warfare on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Mama, what does the chicken say? Dog. Cat. Giraffe.
Giraffe, really? Giraffe.
You're not going to get it all right. Just make sure you nail the big stuff, like making sure your kids are buckled correctly in the right seat for their age and size. Get it right.
Visit nhtsa.gov/the-right-seat.
Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Unlike other health concerns, mental illness is not always easy to see. Depression won't show up on an eye chart, and you won't find PTSD by looking at a thermometer. Sorting out a mental health concern takes professional diagnosis and treatment. Anxiety won't just go away under a bandage. If you or a loved one has a mental health concern, call 1-800-662-HELP for free and confidential information and treatment referral. Learn more at samhsa.gov/support.
Government today.
They're not human. They ought to be destroyed.
It's like all the children from the Village of the Damned grew up and went into politics.
You can't stop us, you know.
Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
And my guest is John Parsons, Crypto, his friends call him. So I call him Crapto because he loves Sabine and who loves all sorts of things, which we won't talk about right now. Look, I'm just John, I'm just wondering, how do they determine that these were linked, these diseases were linked to the vaccines?
Well, like as we first heard ages ago, the HIV was part of that design of that mRNA scenario, and they've got this immune problem with it. So they've got AIDS being the result of HIV virus. Well, here they've got AIDS as a result of the part of the vaccine which has imitated the spike of the virus. So here we find the protein and the same thing. So they're seeing this surge of brain degenerative disorder, and they've traced it to what it is, and they've traced where it's coming from. So it's definitely associated with the vaccine and the original strain of, which is Wuhan, of the virus. So they can prove this is what's happening. Ironically, it means that China, which with its Sinovac and Sinopharm vaccines, which were created from that original strain of virus, are now suspect as well. So, you know, where they thought they might have pulled a Swiftie and made us produce the synthetic version and then have the real one, they could be just as much trouble. But it's catching the new Omicron doesn't seem to give you the same potential. And because it's a virus, it's a short-lived thing in your system, 5-7 days. But the vaccines are there prolonged, giving you multiple continuous doses of it. So it's probably not going to show up as a result of the virus because it's not in you big enough, long enough. But because you've been vaccinated big enough, long enough, you wouldn't take a boost, to put it that way, would you?
No.
And the amount of people I've spoken to recently have said, I might have got the first two because I had to go to the pub, but I'm not having the third, that's for sure. And the great Dr. Bay, who stood up and, you know, God love him, in that AMA conference, what he said was correct. We are getting long-term immunity out of catching the virus. We're getting like 28 days boosted down to 10 days, and it's only that, what I've been saying from day one, it's that innate immune response that's giving us some help, nothing after that, and priming and antigenics in and all the rest of it. So there is a definite identification of the virus being a short-term introducer of these prions, but the vaccine being a bulk producer.
Now, if somebody wants to find out more, and I would imagine no one should call you until Friday because the English language will be a challenge for you. 10 bottles of bubbly and a couple of cockatoos flying overhead, you'll be nobodies. But if they wanted to contact you thereafter, how would they do that, John?
CryptoJohn3, K for Crypto, John3, and I post what we talk about on there, and there's lots of stuff coming out about this. If they just Google search it, they will see what I'm saying is correct. It's not just one newspaper, multiple.
It's very scary, isn't it?
It is.
Have a good couple of days. Have one for me. This is TNT Radio.
With a quick check of the day's headlines, I'm Matt Boyland. The leader of Al-Qaeda has been killed in a US drone strike carried out by the CIA in Afghanistan's capital. The death toll from the devastating floods in the US state of Kentucky continues to rise. 37 bodies have now been recovered, but authorities fear there are many more to be found. And there's growing speculation that US House Speaker Nancy Pelosi will visit Taiwan during her tour of Asia, despite China warning against the trip.
Free speech is in our DNA.
Experimental vaccines will never change that.
Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Yeah, even there. Never miss out on the news and views of the big issues of the day. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio.
Or download the TNT Radio app for free.
From the App Store or Google Play. Today's News Talk. This is TNT Radio.
With the arrival of the pandemic, many of us became guilty citizens overnight. Our world was turned upside down by truly terrible nonsense rules that were not science-based. They were emotion-based and control-based because they want to control you and you and you. In fact, they wanted to control everybody. And the restrictions imposed by unaccountable, stupid bureaucrats controlling dim-witted, just, I mean, they were very, very bad people. They were terrible people. And they're never to be trusted again to manage a pandemic. And guess what? They're looking for that pandemic. Just must be one out there. Can you see a pandemic? There's one over the hill coming towards us. Now, Jason Olborn, known as Jason Q Citizen, is one of our presenters here. Presenter. Is that the right word, Jason? Presenter?
I think that's a fair title.
Yes. When do you think the next pandemic? I can see dust on the horizon. I'm not sure if that's a herd of cattle running towards me or whether it's another pandemic coming.
Oh, I think there's about 10 of them lined up. I'm just wondering which one they're going to pull off which shelf.
Jeepers. I think I'll keep running. But I have trouble. There's water out there. If you were here, you could just zip across the bay and you'd be off across the water. But I can't walk on water just yet.
Although we were all working on it, aren't we?
We heard the Laurie Lawrence spot just beforehand, the ex-swimming coach. And my wife says if I play that again, she's going to stab me. So tonight, this could be our last conversation. She says, if I hear that again, I'm going to stab you. And I've hidden the knives. Now, you know, we are a station that prides itself on of good citizens of Australia, yet you're dragged into court. You were held up before the Supreme Court and for not wearing your mask. Okay, I'm trying to be serious now. Why were you in court today? Tell us the story of this dastardly act that you have committed on the Australian population.
Okay, so I'll give you the Tarantino result. Yes. And the result was that today I went to court with a $500 fine, which unbelievably is considered a criminal offence. For not wearing a mask inside a private business 12 months ago in a room that I was working on my own that was ventilated at a time that we were averaging 73 cases in Australia per day.
Wow.
How's that? And I arrived, I had my my information prepared, I was going to defend myself. And when I arrived, I noticed that my old boss that I was working with at the time was out the front with a legal advocate that also works with her. And I said, what's going on? They said, well, you wouldn't believe it, but the Newcastle local court has today reinstated mask mandates. We're not allowed in because we forgot our exemptions.
Oh, my God. It's something out of the two Ronnies.
It seriously is like it is a Monty. We're living a Monty Python movie.
Oh, the Minister for Silly Walks. There's a few of those ministers around right now. So what's happened?
So I go inside. I walk inside. So,
are you shackled?
No, I'm a free man, and I won, and I was my case was dismissed, which was terrific. One of our friends, another friend who is an actual lawyer, part of the freedom movement, he came to defend my old boss. And he said to me, look, what's your approach? We had spoken about it briefly. And I said, look, I've prepared some notes here. I want to plead not guilty and argue it. And I've got my notes here. And he said, look, you can do it. He says, just beware that the history of these things, because apparently there's well over 1,000 people who were fined in Newcastle who all decided to go to court after they got their fines. And he said the history so far, if this has now been going on for a few months, is that you can argue the plead guilty with explanation and likely get a Section 10, which means that they'll dismiss the case and it's gone and there's no recording of it, or you can argue it. He said the problem we have arguing is that anything that's so-called, inverted commas, exotic, if you're going to argue the Privacy Act against the public health order, the judge is going to laugh at you and basically give you the fine and you'll have to go to the next court. And then it was further explained to me that if we go from local court to, say, we go to the district court, say we go to a court of appeal, and say we lose all three of them and then we want to go to the high court, you have to apply for standing at the high court, which we've heard through, you know, with people like Merrill Dorey from AVN and the youth advocate Suzanne over there. They have a lot of trouble getting heard in the high court or even the federal court because they can't get given standing reason to go to the court. And it was explained to me that if you went all that way and had three appeals and lost, they'll just look at you at the high court and go, no, you don't have standing, you can't even come in here. So they get to pick and choose what you're going to do. So I said, okay, well, it sounds like everything you're telling me to do is to go down the plead guilty with explanation route and just explain it. So that's the way we decided to go about it. And I didn't actually have to say anything. My lawyer friend took care of it and it was all over in about 2 minutes. But the funny part of it was that the magistrate really didn't have anywhere to go. It was all a bit silly. And he looked at me at the end. He called my name out. I stood up. There was only two of us left in the court at this stage, in the courtroom. And he said, we have plenty of people coming through these courts. We don't need any fools like you. Case dismissed.
So did you say anything? Like, oi.
You know, honestly, what I thought under my breath, I thought, more the fool you. If you keep taking these jabs, you won't be here in a couple of years, and I wish that's not the case. That's all I could think to myself, and I thought, just be the bigger person. But I stayed and waited to see how my old boss would go, and she also had her case dismissed, and our friend the lawyer was very clever at working out the so-called loopholes. Now, the real story is the story behind it, as it always is. And the judge admitted, magistrate admitted in court a couple of times, as did the prosecutor, that these health orders were being put together so quickly throughout this period, which is 12 months ago, give or take a few months either side, that no one really had an idea of what was going on. And the prosecutor himself said to the magistrate, in my case, he said, Your Honour, these public health orders were only changed 21 days before Mr. Olborn got his fine, so it's reasonable that he may not have been aware and all of us were confused at the time. And the magistrate repeated it. So then in my old boss's case, he said the police commissioner went out, he told all these officers to go out and write all these tickets and let the courts sort it out. And here we are a year later sorting it out for them. And I thought, geez, that's cynical. But at the very least, I feel like they said something because they were actually being challenged for the first time, even though technically we challenged and went on and got through the loophole. But what we did was we clogged the court for the moment that we did. The other interesting part of this was that the process of going through this appeal, this process, if we had lost and appealed it and then won on appeal, the court, the magistrate gets quite, like they all get a bit, I didn't realise it, but they don't like it if you appeal something. So he was very careful not to convict and knowing that it could go to an appeal. So he was very careful when he was dealing with my boss's case because she actually went through and it was heard rather than it was just a guilty with explanation plea. And he sat there and he considered these six or seven different points to eventually dismiss the case, knowing what was going on. So you get a real understanding of this legal process that they go through and they do not like it. Now, in my case, the police officer that came in that gave us both these tickets on the day, he was in court for my hearing. And he was quite a pleasant guy on the day. And then today, I said hello to him, and he said hello back. And after I got out of the after I got my result, he said, you know, he said, good on you, and he said, well done. I'm happy for you. And I thought, oh, wow, really?
It's like an executioner, an executioner saying, you know, as you're being carried away, there was no pain. Well done, you didn't feel that pain. I mean, the guy still arrested you.
Well, I wasn't arrested. It was only a fine, you know, whatever. But the main thing was that you could see in 12 months how much progress we've actually made, because there are a lot of police officers that that are now sort of doubting, they're questioning, they're also getting in trouble themselves. Some of them being charged with assaults, as we've seen on some of these horrific videos out of Victoria. Mm. So there's a real shift and a real change. And of course, the other big story is that the police officers over the age of 50 have all been mandated for number 4 jab.
Mm.
And so these guys are going to start thinning out soon, which is, you know, you're either going to retire early or, you know, 4 jabs. I mean, how long will you be around?
Fall off the dock.
That's right. So there is a real shift, and we're living it and we're feeling it, but it is a really nice feeling knowing that I didn't capitulate. I didn't say, oh, I'll just pay the fine and get over it. I was never going to do that. I didn't really have a strategy set, and it was at 5 o'clock this morning that I sort of woke up and thought, oh, I should put together my notes and as usual, my stats and the rest of it, because I wanted to get it onto the record, so to speak, that this guy's no fool, even though he called me a fool, which was ironic. And you have to laugh at it. There's always authority just has to tell you that they're better than you, don't they?
But you laugh when they're not looking. Was it in the morning or the AM or the PM?
The court hearing, well, you rock up at sort of 9, 9.30, and by the time you get through security and upstairs and 10 o'clock, the magistrate walks in probably 10:15. By 11 o'clock, he's already having morning tea for half an hour. It's honestly, it's just a different world in there when you look at it. But the mask mandate thing blew my mind. So I rock in, everyone's got masks on and I don't, and the sheriff looks at me in a tailspin, panic.
Arrest you again.
That's right. And I said... He said, why are you wearing a mask? And the other sheriff's trying to hand me a mask. I said, mate, I don't wear the mask. I have an exemption. And he looked at me like, oh, well, can I see it? And I said, this is the irony. I'm here because I didn't show it to the police officer and now I've got to show it to everyone. Maybe I'll just pin it to my hat and just walk around with it proudly. And the whole thing is so silly that you can have an exemption that you can have from a justice of the peace who's got no medical connection whatsoever, and that is perfectly acceptable. So it forms a loophole.
I reckon because you were before lunch, and you know, my dad was a copper for a long time, and he used to know a lot of magistrates. And let me tell you, the lunch is very, very appealing. And if you're getting towards lunchtime, they don't want to, you know, mess up their, you know, their pepper steak with a glass of red. And he would have said, lunchtime or a debate here, lunchtime wins. Yes, you're acquitted. So maybe that was the real fact of the matter here is that lunchtime was looming, and the magistrate, like all good magistrates, was looking forward to a glass of red and that pepper steak.
Well, I don't disagree with you at all because I had heard that. I actually had to have a traffic matter last year. I can't remember when
so
it was.
You're a habitual criminal.
Well, it was only a traffic matter that I also won, so I wouldn't say that. It was, again, one of these ridiculous, you know, overzealous police officers.
Those red lights, forget about them.
You know, like seriously, when they set up their radars, you know, illegally and they ping you on a public holiday, which is what it was. And I knew I was going to get off it because it was incorrectly done. And I just, again, turned up and did it. But someone told me on the day about the hour of standing before the magistrate, you had what your odds were. And it was right, just before lunch is exactly the best time to be heard.
So just to save the police, can you tell us where your next crime will be? I mean, you're obviously thinking about it because you got run over somebody, you got fined for that. then you have the mask thing. I mean, you are a danger to society. We'll find out how dangerous you really are after this commercial break. This is TNT Radio.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th.
With his expert analysis and opinion,
this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
The marquee matchup in today's Arizona Republican primary is the race to be the GOP's gubernatorial nominee between Trump-endorsed former news anchor Carrie Lake and Mike Pence-backed businesswoman Karen Taylor Robeson, who has ties to the McCain machine. Despite outspending Carrie 6-1, Karen is trailing her badly in the polls in a race widely seen as a proxy war between the president and his vice president. Meanwhile, in the race to be the U.S. Senate nominee facing off against incumbent Democrat Senator Mark Kelly, a former astronaut, a win by tech investor Blake Masters would cement billionaire Peter Thiel's role as a GOP power broker. Meanwhile, in Michigan, Governor Gretchen Whitmer is running unopposed in the Democrat primary. Leading the Republican candidates is former commentator Tudor Dixon. The knock on Tudor is that she once acted in low-budget horror films. The knock on Governor Whitmer is that she has turned Michigan into a low-budget horror film. For MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Carbon monoxide is a colorless, odorless gas that can be fatal. Don't use anything indoors that burns fuel, such as gasoline-powered generators, camp stoves and lanterns, or charcoal grills. Opening doors and windows or using fans isn't enough. Have your vents and chimneys checked to make sure water heater and gas furnace exhausts aren't blocked. If you feel sick, dizzy, or weak while using a generator, get to fresh air right away. From the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
While the mainstream media peddles fear, thousands of prominent scientists are speaking out despite a near blackout in the mainstream media. For example, Clintel was founded in 2019 by Emeritus Professor of Geophysics Gus Berghout and science journalist Marcel Kroc. This global network of 900 scientists and professionals make the point that CO2 is not a pollutant. It is essential to all life on Earth. Photosynthesis is a blessing. More CO2 is beneficial for nature, greening the Earth. Additional CO2 in the air has promoted growth in global plant biomass. It is also good for agriculture, increasing the yields of crops worldwide.
Instead of putting a cracker under a politician, why not some TNT?
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Jason, should that be politician or magistrate?
Are you asking if I should be politician or magistrate?
No. We're saying the thing was, instead of putting a cracker under a politician, what about some TNT? I'm just thinking maybe you could have put that under the magistrate.
Oh, look, I honestly don't even think it would have worked.
We're off track here a bit. What was your impressions of the legal system when it came to for example, not wearing masks? Is it a half-hearted exercise now, or are they still fairly legit?
Oh, look, the obsession with people and mask wearing is something else. When you walk into a courthouse, a four or five level courthouse, and the sheriffs are out the front with the baggage handling to make sure you're not carrying in any implements, all in masks, and all the usual staff are walking around in masks, and all the people walk in and they want to fall in line and comply, they're in masks. And yet as soon as you walk in without one, all of a sudden they started coming off. By the time I got up to whatever level, I think it was level four, half the floor were out of their masks.
Mm.
And then you go into the courtroom, the magistrate's not wearing a mask, the lawyers aren't wearing a mask, and then the gallery decides, oh, maybe I won't wear it now. And no one says anything. Only the sheriffs were the ones that were concerned, and they look at you. And I got asked three times going through the check-in, check-out thing that was no more than 4 meters long, and three separate sheriffs asked me why I wasn't wearing a mask, and I told them I had an exemption. Oh, did you show it? Yes, I did. Okay. And that was it. It's very odd just how unaware people are. They put the mask on. It's like it blanks out all of life, not just the air, but just the reality. I just marvel at the whole idea of it, knowing what we know now, but people still clutching onto it like it's going to save them. Mm. And given that we're at, 9.5 million cases, 40% of the country's had COVID, you're not going to avoid it at this point.
No.
You're going to have to get it at 40%, given that this is the other story, that on August 12, when I got the ticket, we'd only had 37,378 cases in all of Australia in the first 17 months of COVID.
Jeepers.
And now we're at 9.4 or 9.5 million 12 months later, and those last 9 million all came from New Year's Day.
Mm.
So this was the point that I was trying to just get these people to grasp that they were even working it out. So as an to expand on that, we're now at 11,000 846 deaths yesterday. But back then, last year, August 12, we're at 988 nationally only. And out of those, 655 were directly linked to the Victorian quarantine fiasco. In New South Wales, where we'd had 102 deaths at that stage, 26 or 28 of them were connected to the Ruby Princess and 16 connected to the Newmarch nursing home. So we really only had 44 deaths in New South Wales at that point in the wild, in the general community. Mm. 44 deaths. And we were in a mask, a mandate inside a private business in a sealed room with ventilation on the second floor of a building. This was not good enough.
Could have gone the other way. You could have been playing Mother one night. So that could have been locked behind those bars, and that would have been it for Jason. Q Citizen would have had to find someone else. Jeepers.
Imagine.
Although you could have done it with a captive audience. Sorry, that's pretty poor. Just thinking, though, because you ran for the – trying to keep this sensible without going too far here. And so far I've just been probably struck off the register if there was one for uncontrollable nincompoops. Well, that's me. But I'm just thinking, though, because you ran for the federal election. And,
yes.
And now we have, you know, the Labor Party's in there with the help from the Greens and the Teals. And Josh Frydenberg lost his seat in Kooyong to a lady by the name of Dr. Monique Ryan. And I'm ashamed that she has the same name as me, so I'm going to change my name from from Ryan to something else. She's a doctor. Okay.
Yep.
Call me a doctor. Okay, you're a doctor. But she's a doctor, and she's – this is her in question time. Tell me what you think, because we're talking about masks.
Put your masks on. From repeated infection, COVID-19 infections in this country are at a record high and increasing. Can the minister please explain how he proposes to manage the oncoming national significant burden of disability and chronic illness? Put your masks on.
Put your masks on.
From repeated infection.
Order.
The members.
Infection with
COVID-19.
Put your mask on.
How ridiculous. But she is with the Teals, and the Teals, I've looked up in one of the dictionaries, it says Teals full of hot air and not much sense behind it. I mean, she's a doctor. And don't forget, the doctors said, wear your mask, get the jibby jab, and look at us now. So here she is. Yeah, she's got nothing going for her. She's with the Teals, a doctor, and nobody's wearing masks around her. She's got a terrible life ahead of her. But this is what the government now is going to be doing. They're going to come out with a mask again. I can see here in Queensland, you see this itching to get in there and make you wear a mask, make sure you have your unsociable distancing and that sort of stuff. How long do you think it's going to be before they mandate that everyone wears masks again everywhere?
It's such a knife's edge, because they're now doubting themselves, and the Liberal Party in opposition has finally become an opposition, and they won't support it now, even though they did it under ScoMo. So one has to wonder why all of a sudden they've grown a backbone in all of this and are defying the new government, the Labor Party, which was in cahoots with them the entire time of COVID. Mm. So, look, the scariest thing is this story coming out of Queensland, where they're going to change the law between basically ruling out the sanctity of the doctor-patient relationship and saying that the public health comes before the individual patient, and that will springboard around the country, which basically means you've got no hope with your doctor. So this doctor has become an elected politician, keeps her medical status, and now becomes no more than a school teacher bullying students.
I mean, she's just terrible. I'm just thinking, though, it's a bit like going to a priest in the confessional, and then the priest heading down to the pub to tell everybody about your conquest. And the same thing with this thing. If you go to the doctor and you got something wrong with you, the Gestapo will come in and tell you that you have to give that information up about that client. And look at Mark Hobart in Melbourne. They raided his office with these people dressed with badges saying official. Official, that's what it was. Mm-hmm. So, and that official grabbed all the private details of his patients. None of their business. And the other thing too, first of all, masks don't work. And the theory is that it will stop you from transmitting to the next person, but it doesn't work. So it's an airborne virus. airborne virus, and it doesn't work. Well, tell me this: in your time as a commentator and as a politician, what sort of protection would you have for monkeypox?
Goodness me, it's so obvious what's going on with monkeypox. I mean, it looks like we've wound the clock back 40 years and come back out of it.
But what's the equivalent for the mask for monkeypox?
Well, all I can think of is that scene from the Blues Brothers movie where Jake gets out of prison and Joliet and the prison guard gives him back his stuff and he hands it back and he says, "One prophylactic soiled." And I mean, it's basically behaving like a sexually transmitted disease. And when you look at the way that you can catch it through prolonged skin to skin contact, and it's all, you know, going through the gay community, through the sexual health clinics. I mean, it's pretty obvious. And then you're hearing all these complaints like the man had multiple partners and rah rah rah, and we're like, When was this ever normal, except in the last sort of 5 or 10 years, that all of this goes out the window? And yet it's just a simple precaution, guys.
You know, I have to say, though, I make a bit light of this because it's the hysterics that are surrounding this is getting to a stage where some of these people need a box in the ears to tell them to grow up. But however, having said that, you've been involved in all the discussions on the vaccines and inverted commas there, and with your immune system being compromised, do you think that would have a part of this, part of the whole problem right now, is that those that have been jibby jibby jab jabbed have opened up the whole closet for diseases and stuff to come in?
Well, this is entirely what's being revealed in real time, isn't it? And this is absolutely frightening that we're seeing that the immune system of these individuals, the more they take, the weaker it gets. And therefore, if you found out even 5 years ago that you were HIV positive, you'd be pretty scared. And this is and it's like in the last interview with Crypto Man, and he was saying the same thing, that now this is the new form of AIDS. But at some point, people got to wake up and say, "Wow, and what? How am I going to deal with this?" But at the moment, we're not dealing with anything. We're just going along with the narrative. Yep. Going along with the narrative.
Have you seen the similarities? I mean, you got two things: COVID. It's the thing is the jab. With monkeypox, the thing is
the jab.
The jab, and so probably none of those jabs are required because the jibby jab, along with the vaccine, is really bad. And I'm not going to go there with the next bit. So, Jason, thank you very much. Have a lovely evening and looking forward to your show. Take care, God bless, and drive safely. Bye.